Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Veronica.
And this is the Wheel of Time cast.
And this week we're covering the Wheel of Time, Season 3, Episode 2, A Question of Crimson.
And this was more characters, more crazy, strong presences on screen. Like there were, I feel like I don't want to say like a setup episode, but I'll tell you what. That beginning, that opening scene was pretty good for shock value. And but before we get too deep into it, you want to give us what Amazon says?
All right. So in-depth Amazon summary. A dangerous visitor comes to the White Tower. Perrin returns home. Rand and Egwene forge their own path under Moraine's watchful eye. The end.
I mean, this is actually like pretty, like reasonably accurate.
just, you know, it, not very that, detailed.
So I will just elaborate on those with my summary. Queen Morghese of Andor brings her family and advisor from the White Tower looking to find her daughter Elaine. The Amyrlin Seat assigns a dangerous task to Nynaeve and Elaine. Rand and company make the trek over the spine of the world, fighting dreams and with their purpose. Perrin, Loial, Bane and Chiad, make it to the rivers to an unwelcome reception and unexpected company. And Matt reconnects with Ben and struggles with his memories and competition in Elaine's brothers. which I thought was actually a really, really funny scene in a couple of aspects. So how'd you like this?
You know, like for an episode that sort of like you said, I don't feel like it like necessarily progressed the story forward a huge amount, but I still thoroughly enjoyed it. I liked what like character development we got. I really enjoyed getting to know more about Elaine and her backstory. And I left the episode very excited to get back to episode 3. So I think that's a sign of a good episode. Overall, I really liked it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there was definitely some excitement in just returning the world in episode 1. And for me, seeing more characters come to life and, finding out a little bit more, there were some really funny comparisons in my head. To some of the characters, and they weren't ones that I necessarily expected to have. Before we get too deep in, do you have any questions that you want to
ask? I have a few just like general questions that I think would help me in resetting some things. And I think it's stuff that I should know from last season that I just need a refresher on. So I couldn't remember the full significance of Andor and what, like, the dominion of Queen Morghese and eventually Elaine actually is versus, like, they're just a good ally to have or they actually hold dominion over this entire land that we're in. Like, I just didn't have a good understanding of how big her dominion is as a queen.
Okay. No, that's a pretty good question. So and Amazon actually has like the maps on Amazon Prime that are very, very helpful. But so this landmass is split up into, I think, 7 or 8 different countries. I'm just assuming that it's something like the size of the U.S. from coast to coast. And so tier would be like Florida, not like Florida, but like the location of Florida. tier and Ilion would be like down in the southeast. Shinar would be like Illinois, Montana, Wisconsin, or Minnesota. Yeah. And then like the kind of the middle and down into the southwest, like from like Oklahoma down towards like the southern tight end of California, like Nevada and Arizona and New Mexico. And then Tarvalon, I believe, is kind of like DC, where it's its own entity.
Okay. That makes sense.
Like, no, it doesn't reside in a country per se. There are, you know, mountains too. You can see the Dragon Mount, like behind it, like the mountain in the background. But I believe it was a little bit south. And I believe that Camelin would be like up in that Oklahoma style area. And so you're talking a relatively large area, which means that, you know, kind of like back in the, you know, the old West days in the 1800s, you wouldn't really see a tax person or someone who would like a queen's representative or whatever in these far reaches of the land. So if you said that like the Colorado was like where the Mountains of Mist and the Two Rivers are, then Oklahoma is, and they're all riding on horses, they're not in cars, they're not in planes, they're not in trains, you wouldn't necessarily like even recognize like Egwene is like Elaine last season was like, you're my subject, and she's like, I ain't your shit, like she is a queen in one of the you know number of countries, her sway, you know, she is a very public figure. She is a queen of a country that is sizable and has a lot of resources and a lot of money. Which is why the alliance between Tarvalon or the White Tower and Andor is so important.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. My next question, I'll do this one because I think it's in line with this of just, can you quickly, like, I do remember this because I just was rewatching season one and a few of those little like Amazon shorts, but I just saw it for like everybody else who may not have thought about this since season one. It was brought up as they were sort of going back to the Two Rivers about the city of Manetherin, and can you just like give us the like 2-minute summary of the significance of that?
Sure. And this is kind of and I believe that there's actually one of the Amazon shorts on it, but this is the story that Moiraine told, the Dark One's forces were coming and they sent for aid, and the king and queen, the queen was back at the stronghold and the king was like on the ground. And so they held for 3 days, or, you know, for like three, at first it was like 3 hours, and then 6 hours, and then 9 hours, and then 3 days, and then 6 days. And then like on the 10th day, they realized no help was coming. And, because I believe that because the queen had bonded the king as a warder, she felt him die. And so she, you know, drew in more of the power than she could handle, blew all of the Trollocs and all of the Shadow Spawn and all of the Dark One's forces, across the river. And the army of Manetherin gave up basically each Each inch of land was given up in gallons of blood. So for every inch that the shadow took, they paid for it in blood. And then eventually, you know, all of the small portion that survived, they basically they escaped and exited Menetherin down like the back of the mountain or something like that. They said it was called Mountain Home, I believe, is what Menetherin meant in the old tongue. And so they, you know, left and then resettled elsewhere in the area. And then their ancestors are now the people of the Two Rivers.
Right. Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then my next question, like, I don't know if you can really answer this. I think I meant it more from like, not from your super from your book knowledge, but just, is there some obvious thing I'm not thinking of as to how you would expose a black Aja or a black friend, a dark friend, other than just like traditional spying and trying to catch them in doing something like tricky? There's not some like tell for a black Aja, is there?
So it's very specifically like the easy one is lying. If you can catch them in a flat out lie.
Because I said I can't lie.
Because the oath rod, that means that if they say the sky is green when the sky is in fact blue, then they are, you know, they are not bound by whatever oath.
Oh my God, I feel like I need to go rewatch the episode and like reanalyze every single thing, every eyes that I said now.
It's hard because I've noticed myself kind of listening to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So like when I rewatched episode 8, like the finale of season 1, and Lan came and you know, where's Rand? And like the look on Moiraine's face, he didn't say, you know, she didn't say he died. She just like the between the look on her face and the words, he's gone. It was like, oh, okay. And then as I was rewatching, I think a part of season 2, she went to go say something. And then you could tell that she like changed the words. Maybe, oh no, it was actually that same scene because it sounded like she was going to say, you know, the dark one stilled me or something like that. But then she changed it to, I can't touch the source. Which is 100% accurate. Like that is absolutely what the truth of the matter was. A true statement is I can't touch the source. The reason for that, you know, you may not necessarily know. But again, we go back to the whole idea of if they believe something is true, then can they still say that if they believe that it's true? Or if, like in the movie Liar Liar, like he said, oh, is that true? Well, I said it, so it must be true. Not necessarily. If you know that it's something, or if you think that something's true, I believe that.
Yeah.
That you can't purposefully lie, or you can mislead the hell out of people, but.
Yeah, interesting. I think that's such an interesting part of this whole concept of the Aes Sedai and having to really think about the way that they're saying things.
Right.
It's just fascinating.
Oh, you have a sister in the city? All Aes Sedai are my sisters. I consider all of them my sisters. And so, yes, I do have a sister in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you could say that's a lie, but it all depends on your perspective.
Awesome. Well, those are my 3 questions. And those were 3 great answers.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. All right. So I think at this point we should go ahead, take a quick break. I don't think this is going to take crazy long. But I think that we'll take a short break and then we'll get back and do it with our points. Awesome.
Are Are you a financial advisor considering the independent RIA model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. They've helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Okay, and we are back. All right, so we're going to go ahead and get into our discussion points. Now, as I said, we were kind of changing it up a little bit. We're going to talk about Morghese and Elida and like what was going on in the White Tower, because it's all kind of based around the Black Aja and, you know, what had happened previously. So, how about you start?
Yeah. Let's just like start at the beginning and talk about that crazy opening scene with Queen Morghese taking the throne 20 years ago in Andor and literally cutting out any of her competition, like literally just cutting them out. It felt very Game of Thrones. Like in general, I think the entire royal family in Andor feels very like Game of Thrones coded, and that specific action really like felt that, and it felt darker than this show usually feels. I mean, I know we've had lots of like gruesome deaths and battles, and it's not like it's like a light show by any means, but like the moment of them, like as soon as you see them cover the young prince's eyes, like you know something really bad is about to happen. And I mean, man, they just like took out some young girls right in front of everybody. Like, it was pretty dark, pretty intense.
Well, the young girl goes, "Brother," and then he stabs her in the neck. I was like, oh my God. Like, I feel like the one on our left, right, from the queen's left, it was like, maybe like a family friend or a trusted advisor or something like that, in the middle with the grandmother and what seemed like House Kieran. I think that was what she said. That house, it was like, oh, it was the mother and the daughter. And it was, I feel like they were either like, supporting people or whatever, but then like the young girl would like, it was her brother who straight up just murdered her. It was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Very, very intense. Really drove home Elaine's point last week that she was trying to make to Rand about having learned, like, having to hurt some people for the greater good, you know, like to the extreme, right? Like, she's seen or learned about her mother doing this, like, to the absolute extreme. Like, I don't... Morghese is a hard character for me to read completely. She's very veiled, I think. Like, she doesn't really let... I think we only saw her true emotions show for just a glimpse at the very end of the episode for a moment. Otherwise, she's very composed and put together. So, like, I don't really know how she feels about the way that she has to rule. But from the daughter that she's raised to Elaine, who's been much more expressive with her emotions, like, it makes me think that even though Morghese has this very, very hard exterior, that maybe she doesn't truly take pleasure in the harsh actions she does, but she sort of puts her duty to being a ruler above all. But I might have the completely wrong read on her. But I'm basing that off of, like, you've raised this daughter to rule in your stead someday, and she has these values. Like, if not from you. Obviously, there are other people in her life, but sure. I don't know. It made me wonder if Morghese's tough exterior is really the full story.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I'm not sure. There were things in the book that kind of intimated that this something like this may have happened, but it was never blatantly spelled out or anything like that. So like, it's kind of like what when people refer to like a bloodless revolution, it's never actually bloodless. It's just, you know,
you like avoided a war.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a matter of, hey, some individuals were murdered in cold blood after being forgiven for their sins in order to prevent war in the future. And so, yeah. Like, it's the one in particular that I have heard quite a bit because I lived there for a while was in Hawaii. They refer to, you know, U.S. history books talk about a bloodless revolution or a bloodless transfer of power, and it absolutely was not. It was it was 100% like the U.S. was the bad guys. I'm going to say I get it from a strategic point of view. I get it. But it just you oppress an entire group of people or an entire country. It makes it hard to think to yourself, yeah, we were raised to believe, hey, we're fighting for democracy, we're fighting for freedom, we're fighting for whatever, and you realize that that wasn't always the case.
No,
but regardless, that was like I sent to a friend of mine who, you know, we are big Wheel of Time friends, and I sent one of the straight out of GOT. Straight out of Compton things. I was like, like, that's what that was.
Yeah, like yep. I think I said earlier, like, it should have had the Reigns of Castamere playing in the background. Like,
right.
A lot of their family was very, very Lannister coded.
Yeah, so let's talk about their family. So we have Morghese, who is the queen, Morghese Trakand. And then you have her advisor, who was obviously there 20 years ago when she took the throne. Apparently, she helped her take the throne. If she is kind of cold-blooded or whatever, then she may have been the input that helped her gain the throne. So that is Elida, Elida Sedai of the Red Aja. And then you have Prince Galad. Prince Gawain and Lord Gabriel, who is the prince consort. And so the notes that I have on, so like the notes I have on like my interactions with Elaine, it seems that Elaine and Gawain or whatever are really, really close. Like, she referred to him as idiot. And, you know, shouldn't you be scrubbing some floors?
It seems very typical brother sister, right? Like, jabs. Yeah.
Galad was just kind of a douche, like very know it all, like an older brother who is just like, ugh, I can't, I told you so. Like, he's that kind of guy. And then Gabriel was just like, it was just like a weird greeting between them.
Well, her brothers are basically like the worst iteration of a Disney prince, like, possible. Like, it's just over the top. But yeah, I had a whole point pulled out. Like, who is Lord Gabriel, prince consort of the queen? Because a lot of people had very interesting interactions with him without a lot of explanation. Like, obviously, he's the consort of the queen, but like, even like as he came into meet
the hall,
Leanne,
Leanne,
Liane sort of stumbled on his introduction, but then seemed to greet him somewhat warmly, mm-hmm. like seemed more pleased to see him than the rest of the royal crew. And then Elaine, there was like something weird, but she seemed to get along with him quite well. Like she said, they like to drink together. Like they seemed to have a nice little rapport, like the times that she spoke with him throughout the episode. But like, it just felt like there was more to this person that I wanted to know. And now like he's gone again. So I don't know. It was just very interesting.
Yeah. Specifically, like you could see that they had a rapport when they were sitting and talking to each other.
Yeah.
And like they talked about like important things. And so like, okay, you know, it was specifically the greeting that I was like, that's just weird. And then, yeah, like Liana said, oh, forgive me, Lord Gabriel. Like, oh, okay, that's weird. And then even Swan was like, oh, yeah. Lord Gabriel, so happy to see you. I'm like, all right.
weird. It was all just, it felt like there was like a lot of history there that like I wanted to understand, and I don't know if we'll get more of, but it was interesting.
Yeah, and then I thought that the initial interaction in the hall was really funny, where like Morghese is outside and she's like, let's go. And then Swan's like, not yet.
Such a power play, she can wait. She needs to be reminded that while she is a queen, she's not the ruler of this tower kind of moment.
Like,
you know,
hey, if you're not going to send me a letter, then you can wait an extra 12 seconds. Like, it was pretty ballsy. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you express your power when you have it. I will flat out like this. I'm going to die on this hill. Like, Morghese absolutely looked like the Queen of Hearts with her.
Yeah.
Like, I was like,
her weird like angel wing thing.
Yeah. It was like the almost like a veil and like crazy papier mache shoulder pads or whatever.
And she was angry.
Yeah. It really fit. Waiting for off with her head. It was absolutely. And then, you know, all of the red. Because of Andor and the red and gold, but it was really wacky. It made me laugh, which didn't feel like it should have.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was very interesting. I was trying to understand the reason for the title of the episode, A Question of Crimson, and I thought it could be because Andor seems to be, their color is crimson. But then there's also, like, Rand's crimson hair or just, like, crimson blood killing people. Like, I just wasn't sure. Did you understand?
My guess would be the, like, what is the Red Aja doing?
Oh, yeah, the Red Aja.
What does Andor want? How are we going to be able to get out of here without bloodshed? Or are we going to be able to get out of here without breaking some sort of alliance? Like at the end where she's like, Morghese is like, the next time that I come here, it will be with my army at my back. And neither you nor I want to know how that turns out. Like, I mean, that's pretty straightforward and pretty aggressive.
Yeah,
I can appreciate it. Like, hey, I've entrusted my daughter to you. She is the person who will succeed me as the high seat of my house and our country's queen. But it just seemed very, crazy aggressive.
No, for sure. But that is apparently who she is. A pretty aggressive lady.
So I did really like both the actors who played both Elida and Morghese, like both of them had hella presence on screen.
Elida's voice though is like froggy almost. Like I was looking down the first time that she really had like several lines to say and was like, what is going on? And then I just didn't like connect that it was going to be that same actress. But yeah, they're both powerful women that I would not want to be crossing.
Well, and so some of the stuff that I picked up on. So Elida will be staying in the tower. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need strong sisters around, you know, who better than the person who almost ousted you or bested you in the run for the Amyrlin seat?
Oh, yeah. So how is the Amyrlin seat? That should have been one of my stupid questions. How is the Amyrlin seat elected or chosen?
I believe
is it a battle?
I believe it's election.
Ah, okay.
I'm not 100% sure. It's
a battle.
All right, to the death. We're going to, you know, take two of our strongest. And, but no. I believe that it is, I believe that, I don't necessarily know that it's like a Democratic vote, but I believe it'd probably be like almost like the, the Electoral
Electors.
College.
Yeah.
And each, where it's like, hey, each Aja has a vote and, or like, you know, each sitter has a vote.
Even the Black Aja?
Well, apparently.
yeah, we just didn't know it, but they were.
and so maybe they were part of putting Swan on the Amyrlin seat.
Instead of.
Yeah, instead of Elida. But yeah, so it was. Let me see. What else? I said Elaine. I don't know. I don't know what this says. My notes are that bad. Some other people that I did notice is that they mentioned Lord Brian had, or Gabriel mentioned Lord Brian had to be dismissed, or General Brian.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. Like, so say she's having trouble with the people. Well, that's not great. Yeah, you know, that's never a good thing.
And the army, yeah, no, not great.
Yeah, and then the fact that Morghese is like, well, Swan basically told me there was a dark friend or Black Aja, and so I'm assuming that it was way worse than that because she would only soften whatever she was going to tell me.
Well, and Elida like definitely clocked the column being busted up and repaired when she walked into the room.
It was very nice of
them. I feel like they are very...
She like looks over and then is like, oh, look, this is what she's looking at. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
But so like they obviously are aware something significant has happened there.
Right. And then this kind of goes along with, I'm just like with like the White Tower thing. So Min is talking, you know, she said she saw a vision of more dead Aes Sedai. And
at least borders. Nine. She said at least nine.
Yeah, nine. That's crazy. And so is that a matter of, hey, they find the Black Aja and they execute them? Is it a matter of...
Oh, shit.
Is it a matter of they, you know, there's the Black Aja attacks? Is it a matter of not the Black Aja? Maybe it's Andor attacks for some reason or another. Maybe somebody else does. Whatever Rand. It is. Yeah, Rand goes bonkers. And I did like the line, my visions don't come with a clock.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like her trying to interpret visions like that is a dangerous game.
Right.
A real dangerous game. And so I think, yeah, I hadn't even thought about the fact that it could even be the Black Aja that they've taken out that she's seeing. Like, there's no way to know.
Yeah, the...
Do you think that... So we get this sort of, basically, this continued storyline throughout of everyone leaves from speaking with Swan, and they're like, she's not telling us everything. She's not telling us everything. And here's...
Oh, yeah, we're like Elaine and Nynaeve.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she's not telling us something. Well, does any of us that I ever tell us the whole truth?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fair point.
Which was valid.
Yeah.
But I did think that the... I'm guessing. So the reason that Elaine said that to Nynaeve is not only should you just make that smart assumption, but Elaine's reasoning was that she'd heard Varen and Lyanna disagreeing in the hallway earlier in the episode.
Right.
And so when I was watching the episode again, I realized that what they're probably arguing about right there is the fact that Lyanna is not a fan of having Min be a spy in the tower, like, which came out midway through the episode.
Yep.
And it was kind of a little bit shitty of Swan to ask them to be spies in the tower and not tell them about the third spy that she has in the tower.
Right.
But also fair, like, you know, try to keep your stuff spread out. And if someone goes down, maybe everyone doesn't go down. But
right.
Yeah, anyways, it does, I'm assuming that's probably what that was about. But
the hard part is I would say this. The hard part for Swan is that she, honest to God, just has no concept of who she can trust.
Oh, my God. I mean, how could you? Like, these people that you've literally spent your entire life, you know, growing up with, and you think you're, like, very closely bonded with, you call them sisters or daughters and mother, and they, half of them have now double-crossed you. I mean, maybe not half, but it felt like almost half. Like, a lot of them
double-crossed
you, like, pretty deeply. I mean, it would make sense to be very paranoid and very careful.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. Oh, man. This really is irritating me because I can't read what it says. Elaine puts on crown. That's what it is. She put on the crown before
that
Lord
was
Gabriel
a neat moment.
Her.
Yeah, I was concerned.
A very like bulky crown that I was like, that seems weird.
But it still seemed like she still seemed to carry it well for being a small woman with her hair like not all done up crazy to hold the crown the way her mother's is like. It still suited her. I could see her becoming queen.
Yeah, I did. I liked how they presented, like, even Morghese would be like bandying words with like Elaine. Like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You don't have to tell me today. You can tell me tomorrow. Tomorrow's fine. And she's like, wait, what? And then you notice something similar later on when Swan was talking to Matt. Like, you know, as long as you live, like, that's the thing. And he's like, wait, what? what you talking about? That was a really fun interaction.
Very, very fun.
But as far as the tower goes, like, do you have anything else for the tower? Or more Gase in the family?
I don't think so. I think that was mostly it. I mean, I did really just love that moment at the end, I guess, just noting that I appreciated that Elaine stood up to Morghese and made a really good point about needing to like be
earn
like
it.
Spend the time to be a strong to develop into a strong leader before she takes that role, and especially in these times. And that was that one moment where I think we got to see Morghese be her true self for a moment when she like was like, when did you get so smart, or how did you get so smart, or something to Elaine. It just felt like her harsh facade cracked for just a moment, and you saw her just being proud of her daughter. And I liked that. It made me continue to be like more intrigued by Morghese. And I didn't like Elaine when she was first introduced, because I thought she was throwing almost like a wrench into our main characters. And I think now that I've seen she's one of them and is like help bond the group better, and now we're seeing this like character growth from her, and now I like her a lot, and I think this episode sort of continued that trajectory for me of just liking her character a lot and feeling more excited about what her story will be.
Well, hearing someone stand up not just for themselves, but like saying, oh no, I need to earn this. I need the experience. I know that I don't know everything. I know that I'm not the best. You know, whenever you hear someone say that, it immediately disarms you. It immediately makes you go, okay, maybe I misjudged this person, unless you flat out believe that they're BSing you, but.
Right.
But like, I feel like that is, and I feel like what we've seen of Elaine gives us kind of confidence that this is reinforcing that positive viewpoint.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's everything that I have from the White Tower.
Okay, so outside of a couple things that tie in some other characters, I'm good. All right, you want to move on? What do you want to get to?
Let's talk about Perrin and Company going to the Two Rivers.
Okay. All right. So, long story, thing all kind of summed up together. Perrin and Loial and Bane and Chiad.
Brad and Chad.
Brad and Chad.
No, let's not do that. I'm sorry. Bane and Chiad.
They come out of the ways where Loial was traveling through the ways without channeling. So apparently there was a little leaf that he had to do something with, and then he like closed it with the leaf and then took it with him. And then
I love an ogre. They're just awesome. Yeah,
ogres are they're fantastic.
But he was struggle festing.
Yeah, the
struggle busing. Yeah.
he talked about the longing, which again there is a fantastic little short talking about the longing of an ogre. And then they go, beautiful scenery. Whether it was green screen or whatever.
No, like, it's real. After we watched this morning, I think we started, where is this filmed? And it's all like primarily in Eastern Europe. But like, you know, that beautiful, like the water that almost looks like it's from the Caribbean, but it's a river. That is a real river, I believe, in Croatia.
That was stunning.
It looks like that. I mean, yeah, you like Google, Wheel of Time filming location, and locations. You can find some posts that show across all of it.
Everything was so blue, everything was so green.
A lot of the scenery is real, and it's really. I was amazed. I thought at least it was like, I didn't think there was any way that water was that blue. That's real. So the world is a beautiful place, everyone.
Yeah, so travel, see beautiful things.
Or Google it at very least.
Or that, yeah. So there's a lot of not conversation. I feel like this was like, hey, get to know the area, right?
Yeah.
Get to see where these people grew up. And so then they get to the Two Rivers. For me, it's a little bit weird because they only refer to it as the Two Rivers, but in the book it was called Eamon's Field, and the Two Rivers was like the whole section, was like the whole region.
Okay.
So to me, it's a little bit weird. But so when they get to the town, they go into the blacksmith where Perrin accidentally killed Layla, and he hears her voice, and it's like, oh, that's hard. But then they've been, these damn white cloaks riding through town. What the F is going on? How are these people? I mean, and then later on, you do kind of go, okay, well, at least me having rewatched the seasons, Perrin spoke with Dane Bornhold and said, hey, you're from the Two Rivers. Two Rivers. And he called them Two Rivers. So he knew where to go. And so maybe it's not necessarily coincidence, but like you're pretty far over in Andor. And maybe and that group was also in Falm. So they were already in the West. So maybe they're like, oh, well, hey, while we're at it, let's go ahead and check out the Two Rivers because we need to go hunt down this guy that killed my dad.
Yeah. I mean, last episode and this episode, I just have to roll my eyes a lot at how, like, not careful they're being.
Yeah.
Like, it really irritated me when they, like, were like, yeah, last night out on the town, let's go drinking. Because, like, Moraine just warned you about being careful and, like, said cover your hair. And people, like, did the most mid-attempt to, like, slightly pull a hood up. And Matt's still carrying his stupid horn around, which I know he got called out for this episode. But again, when Perrin and company arrive in the Two Rivers with a mother effing ogre and two ladies that absolutely do not look like they're from there, like you're drawing a lot of attention to yourself And you think just going to like hide out in the attic is good enough? Like that everyone in town
like, did not you not, just see, did you not you see walk all through? The looks? Yeah, all the looks that you were getting on the way
like,
in?
It's Nynaeve's Egwene's mother, Egwene's yep. mother that Egwene's like mom. Hides yep. them in the inn because they own the inn. Like everyone saw Perrin and the Ogier walk across the center of town. And then she literally says, like, there's money on your head.
Yeah.
Like, you think some of these people are not going to give him up? Like, maybe you count on the fact that it's a small-knit town and people that care about each other, but you think one person isn't desperate enough to take the money?
Yes.
Like, it just felt very, very stupid, and I was annoyed at that.
I get like, it. That was
go
like,
hide,
that was,
have someone whisk you away to a cabin that's a little outside of town. I'll accept that.
Go out to, maybe. To Tam and Rand's farm.
Yeah. Maybe I'm still going to be like, you're stupid, but I wouldn't be as annoyed. Okay. That's my rant. I love this show otherwise, but I have to call out when I'm just like super frustrated.
I get it. That's like, that was like the healing last episode where like nothing's unhealable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I agree with you. The same, I was had the same thought on last episode where Matt was like, yeah, I blew the horn. Like, you saw the guy, like, stare at him, like, clock him. And then, you know, oh, we're going to pose for a picture with the horn. And it's just like, okay, all right, you know what? I feel like this maybe is a little bit weird, but okay, all right, I'll accept it. And then I like the fact that, like you said, that Swan called him out.
I do appreciate that. It makes me feel like the tiniest bit better, but I'm still just like, I know they're supposed to be like young and first time out in the world, but they had like a series of pretty like traumatic experiences that I feel like would have made them take stuff like just a little more seriously at this point. But I don't know.
I get that. But yeah, so anyways, they go
in the attic.
And then they go in the attic and oh, it's Alana and Maxim,
acting quite strange. I don't know what's going on. I'm so confused.
By what?
How they're acting? How antagonistic they're acting towards Perrin? Why if she has the suspicious injury that I don't know if I believe is from a Trolloc?
I mean,
the fact that they were, like, trying to say that, well, like, okay, back up. When they came out through the waypoint, they're like, oh, Perrin used, he's wolfy now. He's like, oh, a man and a woman came here before. And
he's wolfy now.
I smell the smell of ash. I'm sorry. So we just then assumed that this is Elena and Maxim, but I don't think so. Like, why does Elena smell like ash? I think there's someone else that came through the waypoint. And Elena did not say yes or no that they'd use the waypoint.
I did notice that they did not deny it, nor did they
very specifically deny answer. Aes Sedai. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. No, don't I just don't was apologize. So
like, I need to go, like, I hope that this is in the next episode because I don't want to wait a week to understand why she's acting so weird. Like, I'm guessing that she's upset that no one came to her aid in the street fight. Like, from the way that she was, like, and she was just sort of snotty to Perrin when he was, like, I forget who he said. Was it Egwene or someone who had been worried about Alana? Did you hear who he said? Was it Moraine that he said?
I don't remember who he mentioned. But he did say,
Elena
like,
was just like, why should you care? Why does anyone care?
No one knew where you guys went afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that I think it is a fair suspicion because we don't know who's what. Like, sure, you had, you were attacking the Reds. You were protecting the Amarylin, but maybe you're black. So, like, eat a dick. Like, that's, yeah. And my guess, again, my guess is that at least a part of that, and specifically Maxim, was Ivan's death.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can't imagine it wouldn't have been Alana as well, but, like, I agree with you. Like, they were acting very, very, strange. Like, aggressive towards that entire group.
Mm-hmm. Very strange.
But I don't get why they would go there.
That
no
too.
One said why. Why would you go there? Are you looking for something? Are you trying to seek something out? What's going on?
I don't get it. I don't know. I have no guesses. Very confused. Very interested. She better not be bad. I like her. I don't want her to be bad.
Okay, so then I think that was basically it. I don't remember anything after that with regards to that group. All right. In that case, I'm going to move on to Matt and Min, or at least Matt's Perfect. Story in the tower. Mm-hmm. So we see him at the beginning, and Rima Sadai, I was glad she got out of Thalm. You know, glad she was not killed in whatever battle. You know, she wasn't broken by the Shanshan.
Mm-hmm.
But she basically was like, hey, weaves didn't hold, can't do anything to help right now. We'll try again later. Like, shit happens, basically, is what it sounded like.
Yeah. Trying to heal him would be as futile as bringing him back from the dead, I think is explicitly what she said about trying to heal a mind.
It's kind of like, there's nothing to heal here. Like, I don't sense something broken here. I just... And it's a brain. It's kind of like we are right now. Like, we understand how a heart... Like, we as humans and as scientists and as surgeons know how a heart works. We know how this works. But we don't really do well with a mind. With a mind, it's kind of like...
We're getting better, like, but
There's some stuff in this aspect... No one has any idea what causes autism. Nobody has any idea what causes X, Y, or Z.
Well, we do know a little bit about autism.
A little bit.
That's my scientist hat coming out.
As someone with, you know, with an autistic child, like, I have read a lot about it, and there is nothing definitive. There are things that have been studied, and we are fairly confident do have some effect, but it's not like, oh, when you have this percentage of this DNA or this percentage of this carrier, sure. there's nothing definitive.
It's not a single gene, bam, right. Answer for sure.
Yeah, it's not like, oh yeah, you have the flu, boom, done. It's something much more difficult and much more complex, just like the mind. And so I can appreciate that. Matt, when he was... the beginning part where he goes, like, he's, you know, oh, hold it with two hands. I was like, okay, yeah, they're obviously playing this for a sexual
Matt is just
assumption
too much.
And then the girl, like, knocking the door. Oh, who's that? And it's some other girl, and he's like, oh, are you being cheeky? The Andorian prince is here. Oh, very cheeky. But, you know, hey, we do what we have to. I did laugh quite a bit at that.
And then you just have to see his fragile ego get crushed when he realizes what's really happening in the White Tower.
Put that thing down. Yeah, we got to come see this. And the line that he's at, Nynaeve, I didn't think this is something you would be into. And her response of, I think everyone is into something like this.
I did like that a lot.
So that back and forth, as well as the line from Nynaeve, oh, yeah, those are your brothers? Yeah, those are the princes. Yeah, they're so entitled. I can't remember what the word she used.
Yeah.
And
then Elaine's response.
Yeah, Elaine's response of... yeah, that's coming from someone who's sleeping with an actual king.
And that shot Nynaeve, she's like, oh, damn.
Nynaeve's face was so funny.
Yeah. I thought those were really great.
Yeah. So there, like, you had Gawain and Galad putting on their show, and then Matt trapped between the dueling bone rooms. I did think it was weird that like it was cool for like novices to be knocking it out with the princes. I would figure that like Aes Sedai would maybe be fearful of having children, and especially the novices.
Their technology, like, their medicine's pretty advanced. They probably have good, like, preventative medicine. It is a very like female empowered society. And so I think like we're seeing women act more similar to how in our society is like acceptable behavior for men, right?
Right.
Like it seems to go for both men and women in this Wheel of Time world, which I think is really nice, right? Like,
sure.
There's not the same like expectation of like Matt sort of acting this way, but like that the women should be like more reserved. Like the women are rushing out to try to get their time with the princes too. Like I noticed and thought that was sort of like an interesting like slight shift, you know?
I think maybe, and I don't know if it's necessarily like book lore or if it is.
Well, I mean, they're literally like servant class. So I think what you're saying, like, I totally recognize what you're saying, like makes sense that like when you're in that like early stage in the tower, you're like cleaning up after people, you're really supposed to sort of fall in line, you can't come and go. So like, I hear what you're saying. I know it wasn't about like that they were women, but more so that they're in this like sort of supposed to be in this like strict role in the tower. Right. Right?
Well, and I don't necessarily mean the fact that they were women. I just mean that like that they were in like a training environment.
For sure.
And you shouldn't, you know, if you end up pregnant, that can really and you may be absolutely right. There may be a matter of like, oh no, you're gonna drink moon tea or you're gonna do whatever. I mean moon tea's from GOT, but
yeah.
But like maybe that very well, but like it seemed like everybody was like, well, yeah, I mean, like the novices will, you know, I don't know if the novices will recover. I think that's what Swan said when they said that Gwyn and Galad were staying there. Like, I don't know that the novices will recover.
So it was just like accepted today. That it was fine. Yeah, so yeah, like, I mean, they must have good preventative measures.
But yeah, so like I thought that was a really interesting thing. So the let me see.
I think the next thing I had was just like the interaction with Swan.
Yeah, there was.
Oh well, there was a little bit with Min too.
Yeah, so like Min is trying to like apologize, trying to like talk to him and maybe try to like rekindle that friendship. Mm-hmm. I get where Matt's coming from. Like he was sold out to like the Forsaken. Like it's not like you could really. Like she wouldn't even
say I'm sorry outright until he was like, "Will you say it?" And then she said it. I was like, "Okay, like you crossed him pretty hard." Like,
I'm trying to say I'm sorry. Well, you're not saying the words. Are you really? You what? No, I can appreciate where he's coming from, but I can also see where Min is like, "Do you have any idea how hard it is to look at someone and say I fucked you?" And I shouldn't have, and I'm sorry. And it's difficult. It is. When you say it the one time, like once you say it the first time, it's easier after that. But like it is different. It is a very difficult thing to not just admit guilt, but then to apologize to the person who you directly impacted.
Yeah. Now, and she rarely was in a very like bad kind of desperate spot when she did that too. I will acknowledge, not that it makes it okay, but it helps put it into perspective.
And he doesn't know it, but she actually like tried to save Rand by trying to get Matt to not go.
Oh yeah, true, true.
So like she was like, yes, I did it. And then I found out who I was doing it with or doing it, you know, who I was selling you to. And then but I still gave up. I gave up, like, losing my vision. I gave up my curse. I gave up the possibility of losing my curse. And he doesn't get that. And so, like, both of them have very valid points there.
For sure.
In my opinion.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think I forgot a bit of that storyline since I haven't rewatched season two.
Gotcha.
Watched it originally.
Yeah, and then I think the interaction with Swan and the I can't imagine you would be anywhere stupid enough to like brag about being the hornblower because like it's just inviting danger to you or you know using it as currency with the novices in the tower. Like I can't fathom that you would be done or even like even crazier be like posing for a portrait of you with a and he's like I. Would you like me to take it for safekeeping?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You may go. Okay. All right. I'm out. I did like that.
Yeah.
I thought that that was smart of Swan and a pointed reminder to Matt to not be dumb.
And she did leave him on a bit of a positive and encouraging note with a story about, like, what a hero is and comparing him to her uncle and
I'm no hero.
Him saying, I'm not a hero. I just do what I have to. And she was like, but, you know, all the people that we remember as heroes were just doing what they had to.
It's like,
that was really nice.
Are you going to die pulling kids from the, are you going to be there when the boots are on the ground? And one of the things that I do like about Swan is all of her fish references. Yeah. Yes.
She did a boat one earlier, boat and putting something in. And I feel like maybe it was to Elaine and Nynaeve, and they were looking at her like, what are you talking about?
How many did they leave as a stub that you don't notice in the shallow, a stub in shallow water that you don't notice until you put a hole in your boat? And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, what?
I like thought that was really funny, but yeah.
There was the very easy one she did with Morghese, which was like, oh, yeah, you and I will both defend our own, like a den of our lionfish will, you know, defend its den.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But the stump one was really, really funny. Because, like, no one had any idea. And then it kind of throws me back to Moiraine saying, oh, you and your Tyrion fishing comparisons. You know, like, there's a pikefish and a lionfish and a stub. I liked that positive interaction of, like, maybe you aren't what you want to be, but maybe you're what is needed. And I like the, like you said, I like the positive note.
Yeah.
It's like the compliment sandwich.
Yeah.
You blew the Horn of Valyr. That's crazy. Like, that's, I mean, you.
And then you were really stupid after you blew the Horn of Valyr.
You were really dumb about it.
Really stupid.
But you could be, like, a hero, right? Like, that's. So that's all I have on Matt.
Same.
All right, so I think all we have left
is Rand
and company. And so I was a little bit I'm glad that we found out this thing in particular, that it is Lanfear.
Yes, I wondered.
In Egwene's. I didn't wonder at all. I thought she was just having nightmares.
I said it out loud when I was watching the first episode, and then I forgot to say it on the podcast, so I sound like a total flipping liar. But I really did wonder, and then when I saw it happen in this episode, I was like, ha ha, yes. But it makes perfect sense that every time she tries to be with Rand, that Lanfear would be trying to really, you know,
Because, like, we talked on episode one about it, hey, you guys had just been together for a month. And it's like, oh, every time that I touch Rand or he touches me, which makes complete and utter sense with the connection that Lanfear has to Rand, she can sense stuff or whatever. And so, like, I was like, oh man, like, that is horrible. And then to see the cut together scenes of her dream and his dream where Lanfear is, like, basically seducing him and also choking out Egwene at the same time. It's just like, oh my god, this is really, really good multitasking. I mean, from a clinical point of view,
she's frighteningly good at being really terrible. Hand her that. She's very good at it. But then we also got Egwene. Did she break from Lanfear's control and slip into a vision of the future? Or, like, what happened there where she sees the Aiel woman suddenly? She almost, like, stops. She's being fed from Lanfear.
I'm going to defer until what I'm assuming is next episode.
Yeah. All right, awesome. But yeah, right. I mean, either Egwene now has the potential to dream the future, or old Aiel woman is able to visit in her dreams. So those are my two guesses.
And well, I'm so excited what was to watch forward. The reason that I don't think it was the Aiel woman going into her dreams is that the Aiel woman was surprised that she was there. Like, she's like, you shouldn't be here.
That's true.
And so I don't think it was, I think that it was, I think there's a possibility that it was Egwene just being so frantic to escape her own dream that she did something out of the ordinary.
Well, it was cool.
It was cool. And I was glad that she was no longer like had Rena's blood like dripping in out of her mouth. And I was like, oh my God, that was horrible. Like that was
terrible.
It was really, really rough. That like, again, back to like more brutality and more almost gore and like visceral reactions.
Yeah.
I can't say that I don't enjoy it because I do.
I love this show. Like, it's great, but it's also like, blech.
there are definitely some times where I'm like, ooh, that's not good.
But you know what I had the most visceral reaction to this episode?
What's
that? Moraine's stupid hat. What in the world?
The sun
what
hat is, with the Ford in the
front. Who is up? She now? Like, what is this?
She definitely looked like a fisherman.
I was upset the entire episode about that stupid hat. I did not like it. Was not a fan. Take it off.
You are a high lady, or formerly high lady of Kyrene. Like, you're an Aes Sedai. Like, have some self-respect, or at least some fashion sense.
I mean, I thought she was going to start, like, singing The Sound of Music or something. Like,
she's in the middle of a mountain. Like, she's on a trek to basically the desert.
And so she packed this special little hat just for this? Like, I don't know. It was just, it was a step too far for me. Come on, Rosamund. Get it together.
I can appreciate that. All right, so other stuff that I have with it. So we did get another prophecy from the Aiel.
An interesting one.
Yeah, the Karakarn shall spill the blood of those who call themselves the Aiel as water on sand and break them as dried twigs. Yet the remnant of the remnant, the Karakarn shall save and they shall live. Like, that doesn't sound good.
Creation and destruction wrapped in one, she says.
Well, and then she says balance. I'm like, I don't know if that's balance. Like,
I mean, I guess they're looking at it as it's, you know, I mean, I guess in their mind, their race doesn't survive without going through this.
Right.
And if they don't fulfill the prophecy, no one survives. And if they do, then at least a portion of them are insured to survive. I guess that's how they're looking at it. Like, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I'm not like I there. And then I did note one prophecy that we didn't mention last episode. And now for the life of me, I can't remember what it was, but I remember I was going through some of the older episodes, and I was like, oh wait, yeah, we didn't talk about this one. It wasn't the People of the Dragon, it wasn't Kalendor. It was like in season one. Okay, doesn't matter. If I remember it, I'll try to write it down again. But yeah, so we got more prophecy. I really, really liked the Rand's description of Sidin compared to Moiraine. He's like, oh, but it's so sweet and I just want to drink it first. He's like, no, I know exactly what you mean. And he's like, but it's also poison, and the filth that it feels turns my stomach, but it doesn't matter because I just want to keep drawing. And she's like, and he's like, do you know what I'm talking about there? And she's like, I don't. Like, I don't know what that feels like.
I thought that was so important for her to listen for a minute. I mean, he had started the conversation by basically saying the reason he's been with Lan is because Lan listens.
Right.
And it was like she started out by not listening, by really quickly wanting to be like, I know how that feels. But I thought it was important that she admitted that was different. She still offered him advice at the end of like being present with the bitter and the sweet and being able to tell the difference.
Both so that you know which one's which. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't think about that because that's kind of the way, not kind of, like it's almost precisely the way that it is described in the book. Where when they talk about, and it's kind of like the difference between like the way that Loghain talked about it and the way that Moiraine talked about it when she was teaching Egwene, where Moiraine was saying, you have to surrender to Sidar, let it flow through you and you direct it. It's like a river. And Loghain was saying, no, you're trying to surrender to it, grab it and force it to do what you want it to do. And I think you feel like it's the difference between the types of power.
Yeah.
And then in the book, what the way that this is described is, imagine that there is this pond and you're dying of thirst, and there's a pond with the sweetest water you've ever tasted, but on the top there is a viscous poison. Ugh. And in order to get to the sweet, you have to go through the poison.
God.
And so you are able to taste the sweet, and it's not even necessarily like the sweet isn't tainted with the poison, but you can feel the poison doing its work on you while you're drinking from the sweet. And I was just like I thought that his description was really good, and it gave you a good visualization of what he's feeling. And I really do think it's funny when we talk about not seeing Weaves yesterday, the last time we recorded, like he is just like, if you can't see his, like the Weaves, all he's doing is like moving his hand around.
Yeah.
And she's just like, all right, that's cool.
I think it's interesting how his weave, you know, has the black in it. And I think that to me represents that like dark.
Yeah, no, I think that's precisely what it is. Because he like would pull out a little bit and it would be like the fire that you saw like Moghedien push into the Gray Man. Mm-hmm. But then like when he said it, then like the tendrils of black kind of like came up and around. And it was just like I think that they are doing such a phenomenal job with that, and they make it all look very, very natural with the hand motions and whatnot. I think well done to the CGI effect department. Like it's been really, really good.
Yeah.
All right. And then I think that the only other stuff that I have is, like you talked about Rand doing the sword forms with Lan because Lan listened and Moiraine didn't. Yeah. But then like, so yes, they are crossing the spine of the world. This is crossing the Appalachians, or this is crossing the Western Mountains. This is a big deal. And then on the other side, there is just desert, and they finally get there. And then Avienda is like, who did you tell? Like, I've been with you. What do you mean? Who did I tell? What are you talking about? And then the Aiel show up. And it is the same woman from Egwene's dream.
Yeah.
And it seemed that the taller man was like someone important, like maybe like the lead of this group or whatever. Maybe like a chief. And I say chief because they talk about the Karakara meaning chief of chiefs.
Oh, right.
But we didn't get a name for either of them, I don't think. And so, this is him. And then that was something else she said. She said, he will be born of our blood, but he will not be raised by us, but he will be of our blood. And he will come. And I can't remember specifically. Do you happen to have that quote?
I don't. It was, he'll come over, he'll cross the spine of the world, right? Like it was that he would come over. But yeah, it was of our blood, but not raised by our blood. And yeah, I mean, basically hers didn't even talk about anything but the destruction. Like it ended with, he'll like destroy us.
Yeah. And he will destroy us. Yeah. Yeah.
But not you know, save us. I think I said something about lead us home, lead us to our land.
Yeah,
something
well, I'll like have that. To go back and watch it again, but I'm also going to watch episode 3.
Me too.
Because I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
So that's everything. Yeah, that's all I have for the moment. So we will, I just need to check on feedback. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll do feedback. And then after episode 3, we'll do news. Because I don't want to look at anything until after I've seen all 3 episodes.
Yep.
All right. We'll be back in a minute. And we are back. All right, so we do have a little bit of feedback. We have some feedback for all 3 episodes, but one of them had a spoiler in it, so we're not going to talk about that for season or for episode 2. So feedback, Veronica, you want to take the one piece of Facebook feedback we got?
Sure. So this is a comment from Jeff Haker, who says, Morghese Chacon's murder of the other claimants was surprising since that's not in the books. Really liking this season so far. I totally agree.
I talked about it, but mm-hmm. it was kind of like, it was hinted at like there was something that happened, but like this was so brutal, but also kind of logical and like it made sense within the story. It wasn't like brutality for brutality's sake.
Yeah.
I thought that getting that out of marble would maybe be a little like every time you sit in the throne room again, now you're going to watch like, I can't fathom that you're not going to have like blood stains on the floor, ooh. But like she, like again, like marble probably doesn't soak that stuff up. It's not like they're limestone floors, but that's like, I just like, man, like she's a hard person to
absolutely
be it able definitely- to like, yep, this is
set the
where
stage
I did it.
For her.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, oh, I don't fuck around. And this is what happens when you find out. Like, this is, but yeah, so no, I agree, Jeff. I think that we have some very specific isolated complaints. But yeah, I think that has more to do with I'll say consistency in one skill over another, and then how dumb our characters are. And I get it. Like, conflict doesn't happen if people aren't dumb. I understand. You have to write conflict into a show. But like, I get, hey, I'm going home. Perrin doesn't necessarily think anything's going to be different. I think that's a very naive way to think, but
yeah.
But yeah, so that's all of the feedback we have right now. And I do apologize. I absolutely, you know, I thought I put out a post earlier today, and obviously I should have put out a post like 3 days ago, but whatever the case is, thank you guys so much for the feedback. And then we will read the feedback that is not spoilers because it is something for episode 3. So we'll cover it then. But other than that, that's all we've got going on right now. That's all we've got. Thanks for listening. We are not going to talk about other podcasts right now. We'll talk more about those when episode 3 comes out. I will say that I keep wanting to get back to White Lotus, and I just haven't had the opportunity to. And Yellow Jackets.
I'm watching Yellow Jackets. It's good. I've got a few. I'm a little behind on the podcast, but it's a good season so far.
Yeah. I think you're only like 4 episodes in. I think episode five is tomorrow. Four is tomorrow.
No, 5 will be next week. So we've just done 4.
Okay. So yeah, like I started watching the season finale of season 2 so that I could watch the first episode of season 3. And I was just like, oh, I forgot how fucked up the show is.
It's so intense. Very, very intense show. But if you like really, really super intense shows and you're not afraid of a lot of sort of gore and violence, then Yellow Jackets is really fun. It's got a lot of the mystery feel of Lost, and
I will say the writing and the actors are
phenomenal. Excellent actors. It's also like funny to lighten up the heavy, scary, creepy, violent show. So it's fun and unique, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really enjoyed seasons one and two, even as effed up as they were. I don't know why I keep switching back and forth between actually saying curses and not, but whatever.
Keeps it mixed up. Keeps it lighter.
Yeah. So, kids only listen to like not those particular words that I say. If you would like to write in or record a message, I'm going to put up a Facebook post for episode three, in 10 minutes, which this is Saturday night. And then you can email us if you want to record a voice message and send it to us. You can send it to us at talk@podcastica.com.
And then, yeah, like you said, check out our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/podcastica.
And I'll tell you what, if you even want to just send either Veronica or myself feedback via message or something like that, I'm good with that too. Yeah.
Reach out.
But next time on this podcast, we'll be covering Wheel of Time Season 3, Episode 3, The Seeds of Shadow. Or maybe not the, just Seeds of Shadow. And I will probably be watching that. And maybe probably got to eat something for dinner, but I'll probably be watching that in that hour.
Yeah, I'm excited to check it out. But for now, that's our show.
Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.